This is Mandy.
And this is Leanne.
And you're listening to Two Blonde Sleuths. And we have Cruz here tonight,
our guest,
sitting with us because he won't go anywhere else. And Leanne, tonight I'm going to tell you a story that I feel like you've probably heard.
Okay.
But it's a crazy story. It's sad and heartbreaking, of course, like these true crime stories.
As most of them are, yeah.
And it's really just unbelievable. I feel like you might remember this one.
Okay.
All right. It's the murder of Cassie Jo Stott. This case was based by the first Scream movie, and it came out in 1996.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to tell you that we went to the movie theater to see it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so scared. I hyperventilated and had to go out of there and sit with the employees until my sister and whoever we're with got finished with the movie.
Was I not there with y'all?
You might have been there, but I could not.
Somebody beat on the exit door at the movies too when I was watching it.
They did?
Yes, yeah, on the outlet, like the exit door at the bottom or whatever. Yeah, somebody beat on it in the middle of the movie, and I don't know why I remember that. I guess it terrified me.
It was definitely the scariest movie in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
It was where I couldn't even watch it because that Drew Barrymore scene and all that mm-hmm. was just too much. This story takes place in Pocatello.
Yeah,
Pocatello?
I can't really see. Got my glasses on.
Idaho. In September 2006, and the story is about Cassie. Cassie was a 16-year-old junior in high school. She was a straight A student and a very responsible girl. And they said she had been babysitting for her aunt and uncle, trying to save money to buy a car. I think it was because she was 16. And they had asked her when they went out of town would she house sit, and I think this was her first time house sitting for them because they had two dogs and three cats. But she also had a boyfriend, Matt, and her mom dropped her off on that Friday night at her aunt and uncle's house. Just to point out, this town in Idaho was considered a very safe Mormon mm-hmm. town. Nothing bad ever happened there. So she even called her aunt and uncle and said, can Matt come with me to house sit? Yeah, and they were like, sure, which good for her for even calling and asking him, right? Because most people sneak their boyfriends over there. But he was going to come over, and her mom dropped her off on a street called Whispering Cliffs Drive, which
sounds
kind of
safe.
Kind of a little
creepy.
Yeah.
Safe and creepy.
And then his mom dropped him off to just go over there and hang out with her and watch a movie, right? And that said they watched Kill Bill 2. It was a pretty remote neighborhood, just to point out. Also, that night, Matt's two friends came by, Brian and Tori. And they came by and they watched the movie with him for a little bit. And they were like, this is lame. We thought this was going to be a party, so we're just going to go to the movies theater and watch a movie. So they left, right? They weren't there that long. Not long after they left, the power gets cut off of the house. And they're kind of freaked out. They don't know what to do. They just kind of wait. And it comes back on, but half of the house's power comes back on. So Matt calls his mom because Cassie's pretty freaked out. Matt's freaked out. And he calls his mom and says, can I spend the night here? And his mom says, you're 16 years old. No, you're not spending the night. But Cassie can come stay with us. And of course, she's trying to be responsible and wants to earn this money. She says, no, I need to stay here with the dogs. Even though half power's out, I don't know if I would have done.
I don't know if I would have loaded all those dogs and cats up.
Yeah, just loaded them up and went, took them all over to Matt's house. Poor thing. And, all right, so Matt's mom comes and picks him up. And he asked her one more time, can I stay the night? And she said, no, you can't do that. You're just 16. So he leaves. So 2 days later, Cassie's aunt and uncle and children come home. And when they get home, they discover Cassie was on the floor and she had been stabbed and she was not alive. That's just the nicest way to put it. So, of course, they started the investigation to who has done this. And the family went and stayed in a hotel for 2 weeks while they investigated this case. Of course, first, they're like, the boyfriend was the last one to see her. So that's who they, of course.
Yeah, poor Matt.
Mm-hmm. Start in on. They figure out, all right, it's not a burglary, they don't think, because nothing in the house was taken.
Mm-hmm.
And they think maybe she had been there a couple of days. Which, going back to this, her mom was interviewed and said, I hadn't talked to her. I thought it was kind of strange, but I just figured, well, she's busy. Nothing ever happens in this town. But I also think, I mean, Matt doesn't talk to her either.
Yeah, that is odd.
2 days later, which in 2006, I think cell phones had just come out. And I doubt they had. 16-year-olds do not have cell phones. So you had to call somebody on a landline. So maybe that kind of makes sense, I guess.
Yeah, maybe teenagers didn't have cell phones. I don't know.
They didn't, I don't think. Because this is a couple days with nobody hearing from her, right? And by the time the family gets back, which I would think it was Sunday, after the weekend of being gone, that's when they discover. All right, so they zone in on Matt. They interview Matt, and they said that it was kind of strange that he didn't have seemed very emotional. And that was a red flag for them, which you never know.
Yeah, you're now you're going to, especially when you're 16, your girlfriend gets murdered. Like, what the heck?
Yeah. And he told them about him leaving because he couldn't sleep over. He tells mm-hmm. investigators all this stuff. And he, like, mentions, okay, hey, well, my two friends did come by, Brian and Tori. And he tells them about the power that went out. And that was definitely strange to the investigators, thought that was weird and a red flag. This is all true that Matt is saying, right?
Yeah.
And they give Matt a polygraph test and he passes. Mm-hmm. So, all right. But usually, even though they can't hold this in court, they usually take them as some kind of credit.
Yeah.
Because after that, they think, okay, well, we found out these two
friends. It's like a guide for them to go by. Like, yeah. Do we keep pushing or do we not?
Yeah. And then, like I said, they thought it was strange that he didn't seem too emotional about Cassie's death. Mm-hmm. But he also did mention, though, when they came by, Matt mentioned when Tori and Brian came by, that he called them later to tell them he was leaving and that they sounded like they were whispering because he thought they were at the movie theater.
Yeah.
Just to point that up, right? So as they start investigating the two friends, they ask them all these questions, they get their story, everything. They learn that these two guys, they loved scary movies and filming movies.
Mm-hmm.
Brian apparently had a crush on Cassie, but she looked at him as more of a friend, just a little bit, to tell you a little bit about him. He felt like he was an outcast. They figure out that these two boys did have movie stubs, because they said they went to the movies and they had stubs. Then they go to the movie theater, and the girl that was working that night actually went to school with Brian and Tori. And they said, were these boys here at the movie? And she was like, no, they were not, because I definitely would have
remembered it.
So that was the first hole in their story. And then they start looking into the boys. Brian was obsessed with the Columbine shooting and was on like a website and chat room about them. Yeah. And they just thought they, since they were outcasts, they needed to do something great like the Columbine shooters where they could be remembered.
Yeah.
Of something terrible, which is really weird. But it's okay. Kind of why those people do the things they do.
Yes.
Like
for notoriety.
Well, once they start figuring all that out, they're like, okay, this is suspicious. So 5 days after the murder, Brian is being investigated again. And this time he starts acting totally different. He seems real quiet and he starts crying and he just starts spilling everything. He says while they were watching the movie Friday night at the aunt and uncle's house, he's got to go to the bathroom. And he goes downstairs and unlocks the basement door to the outside.
Mm-hmm.
So the boys say they're leaving, but what they actually do is they go out, and I assume they move their car. They didn't say that. They
packed.
And they put on black clothes and scary masks. So Brian says that it was just supposed to be a prank, that they were going to pull a prank on Matt and Cassie.
Scare them.
They were going to turn the power off and go scare them. And that night, when they were downstairs, Matt had left, and they knew he left.
Mm-hmm.
But Brian says that Tori just started acting like all hyped up and freaking out and saying, we got to kill Cassie. When they turned the power off, they were trying to get Cassie and Matt to come downstairs because he was there at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they didn't come downstairs, but they did notice that one of the dogs was standing at the top of the basement door and growling.
Creepy.
It's just like the Scream movie. Mm-hmm. It's really creepy.
Yes.
But this town where nothing happens, a small town, these just totally out of left field. These kids that were like born and raised there, these two boys,
grew up together,
all friends. I mean, very similar to the movie. It's like the least likely person that you would think. That's what makes it so creepy. And the boys said after Matt left, they actually turned all the power off and they went upstairs. Mm-hmm. And that's when he says Tori stabbed her, but he did stab her. Brian says 3 times because Tori told him that he had to and that he was scared of Tori if he didn't do anything. So this is where the story takes an even darker turn, if that's even possible. Brian takes investigators where they buried all the evidence. There was black boots, gloves, those creepy masks, and the murder weapons. I think there was actually several knives that they found. And I don't know how many they used, but the murder weapons were there. But to top it all off, there was a videotape. I read one place there was one videotape, and then I read there was 2 videotapes. But the boys had tried to burn the videotape. And I think when Brian was telling this whole thing about how it was all Tori's fault, he knew they had burned the videotapes, and he didn't think they were going to be able to look at them. Investigators, once they took it, they figured out how to watch them.
Oh.
Yeah, and in the tape, it's like a documentary almost of what they're going to do. And it does not document the murder, thank goodness, but it does before and after. And they're just prepping up. They're like, sorry to Cassie's family, but she has to die. It's just awful. It's terrible. And then after, they admit they did it. It was both their idea, and they were both in on it. It wasn't just one or the other.
And what most their parents are like, what in the world happened?
Oh my gosh, it's crazy. So on September 26, 2006, both Brian and Tori are arrested. Both boys blamed each other, said that it was the other one's fault.
Yeah.
They got charged with life in prison with no possibility of parole. On the Dateline podcast I listened to, Brian is interviewed actually at the end.
Oh.
And he takes full responsibility for his actions.
Mm-hmm.
And he he admits it was wrong and that he's sorry. And if he could go back in time, he would, and all these kind of things. But Tori, to this day, he has never admitted his guilt.
Really?
And yeah, and his mother wrote a book. Okay. Wrote a book. It's on Amazon. And talks about that her son was innocent. It was Brian. And even badmouths Cassie's family. But they were manipulative in the trial.
What?
Isn't that terrible?
I think he's just sit back and take it.
His people were
like, just take it.
You can't. Reddit, yeah. People in the comments were saying his mom deserves to be in jail with him and all this stuff.
It's crazy.
And just to top it all off, Tori, when they were searching his house, on his computer, he had child pornography and animal cruelty.
Well, I mean, it's a good thing that he got put behind bars quickly.
Yeah, and Brian did confirm that Tori was inspired by the movie Scream to commit this murder. Mm-hmm. And this is another little tidbit. The boys are actually in the same jail. And Brian talks about this to Keith Morrison on the interview. And he said that they are in the same jail and they see each other in passing, but they apparently hate each other because they blame each other. They also tried to appeal their cases and they didn't get anywhere. But
based on what?
Yeah, no, just one, you know,
Brian's technicalities or something. Yeah,
Brian's nothing, confession was first.
Yeah.
And they were young. Not that, I'm so glad they tried him as an adult. Yeah. Who cares if they were 16? What they did was
an adult decision.
Thank goodness. Sure. But you know, there was a law recently passed about minors getting life in jail, no parole.
Mm-hmm.
That they were like trying to revoke that. And I don't exactly know what, I don't think anything has happened with their case.
Yeah.
That was a new law, which is very disturbing.
You know, scary.
Because it should be a case-by-case basis, maybe.
That's what I think, yes.
Yeah. And that, just the premeditated, it's all on video. It was all planned.
Yeah, why can they, I don't know how they can even say that it was coerced. It was true when he did it.
And it clearly was, yeah, it was on video. It was all a scary movie. All right, that is my story. But it's so sad and terrible story. But it also makes you realize that there's just people... I don't know. Sometimes movies.
The poor Matt kid. Those were his friends that he invited over there. Let them in.
I know. They said Cassie was nice to everybody. Yeah. She was friendly to Matt. And they just chose her. I almost think it was like a pretty girl victim, like in the movies.
And she was alone in a house. And it was just opportunity, probably. And they went over and they were like, oh, this is our chance. To live it out.
Yeah, it was just so terrifying. And those movies were so scary. I guess that's why I was kind of...
drawn to it.
Yeah, because it was just unbelievable, really. And it's not... like I said, we don't tell these stories for entertainment. I feel like people need to be, like, aware of these things.
Yeah, I don't think that Scott's ever watched true crime anything.
So he's not aware.
Yeah, he's not aware. So when I'm watching it or whatever, and he's like... I mean, he can't believe some stuff sees, like, the reason somebody murders somebody else or how they murder. It's like, they really did that? Yeah, they really did
that. Well,
like,
there's usually always a motive.
Yeah.
And with this
one, some of the motives are like divorce or something like that, which is just as dumb as this one. Like, why not just get a divorce instead of kill? But anyway, he can't believe any of it.
Those are all common motives. This is not a common motive to just reenact a movie. Just to go to those links, even if you're undeveloped 16-year-old brain.
Well, you're just hateful. That's just hateful.
And also, child pornography, obviously, is worse than anything. And then animal cruelty.
That's Jeffrey Dahmer in the making.
But it doesn't get any worse than that. Because hashtag adopt, don't trap.
Yeah.
Mrs. Peaches. But.
We'll be back.
And we can,
in 2 weeks.
And we're going to the YouTube channel. So please like and subscribe.
Yes.
Our new, brand new YouTube. So we can bring you videos and not just our voice.
Our beautiful faces.
Thank you for watching and listening.